You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Across the Desk
with Clement Maniatela
on 702.
So on Across the Desk this morning, I am hosting people who work in private security. Like, these are people who are bodyguards. These are people that often, you know, protect people. Some protect property. And I'm interested to know, if you work in the space, what's been your experience? What have been the challenges, you know? What have been the things you love the most about the job? So we're exploring the work of private security. And I'm excited now to welcome Arthur Kuto, who is a bodyguard at TSP Security. Arthur, thank you for coming to studio, man. How are you?
Good, and you?
I'm lovely. We also have Rory Steyn, who's joining us via Zoom. This is Nelson Mandela's former chief of security. Rory, thank you so much for also making time. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement, to you and my fellow panelists and everybody listening. Nice to be on the show.
Yeah, and I'll be taking your calls on 011-883-0702. Your WhatsApp's on 072-702-1702. If you've got some views, some questions, you want to share your experience as a bodyguard, someone who works in private security, you're welcome to do that. Let's start with you, Arthur. How did you get into it?
Okay, so basically, I started in the law enforcement.
Yeah.
I then got an offer in the private sector. So I was fortunate enough to join Transport Protection Services, known as TPS Security.
Yeah.
I went over and, we started in the industry. It's a nice industry. It's an industry, basically, you have to have a passion for it to serve and protect the community or your clients, protect their assets. And since then, I've been doing it now for quite a while, a few years.
And what do you guys specialize in? Is it just transportation?
We specialize in transport, transportation of assets. So basically, we follow the valuable cargo assets of the clients. We also do the close protection officers, which is the CPOs, known as bodyguards as well. We do that. We do armed response. We do static guards. We do quite a variety of the security.
Fascinating. Rory, you had the toughest job, being the chief of security for probably one of the most famous men in the world at the time. How did you end up getting that kind of work? What experience did you have beforehand?
Well, Clement, actually, it wasn't the toughest job. That's a kind of a common misconception. It was an absolute privilege, but it wasn't that tough, because the president was exceptionally good to us, took us into consideration, and he was a pleasure to work for. But I just want to clarify one thing really quickly. So I was the team leader, Clement, of one of four teams that protected him. So I just want to make sure everybody understands it wasn't
all
about
me. How many teams were there?
Four. We had two in Gauteng and two in Cape Town, when Parliament was in session, which is typically the first half of the year, straight after the State of the Nation address.
Yeah.
Then our Cape Town teams were in play, and we would fly down some of our team from here on typically Monday morning. First thing, the guys are on the plane, Cape Town team picks us up. We work the week after Parliament ends on a Friday, normally an afternoon or evening. We come back, so he's at home at his own residence with his grandsons on the weekend, and then we're back in play. So I was one of the team leaders, and I am privileged to say that I commanded a wonderful team of men and women, black and white, and every color in between. And if you've watched the movie Invictus, you'll know it wasn't sunshine and roses at the beginning, but we managed to find one another, probably because of the power of the personality of the man that we protected. Nobody sat us down and said, hey, you guys need to find a way to work together. You are protecting the most famous person in the world. We just realized that it's not just his life and his person that we had to, you know, protect, but also his image, his legacy, what he was about. And if reconciling South Africans was what he was about, then we had to find a way to do that. Absolute privilege. But to answer your question, sorry for the long-winded introduction, Clement.
No, it's all right.
I was the commander of the Joburg Police VIP Protection and Bomb Disposal Unit in the 90s. So when The previous state president, Mr. de Klerk, made that historic announcement that he would release Mr. Mandela unconditionally, that he would unban all the banned organizations. I was serving in the special branch, and with the stroke of a pen, as he signed all of that out of law, we had no more work. So they didn't know what to do with this young Lieutenant Steyn. So they said, you go and start a VIP protection unit. And then if you fast forward 4 years later, when we have Madiba elected as our first democratic president, I now have a president with both a home and an office in Joburg, where I'm still the commander of the VIP protection unit. And there was no such animal then as the presidential protection unit that exists now. That was all being evolved as we had to integrate the MK guys into the SAPS. And so once that had happened, I got a call from, in fact, the guy that trained me in VIP protection right back in the 80s to say, look, the team leader who was the first white oak to be a team leader in Joburg, he's gone to Canada to study, and you're the right rank. The president knows you, you know him, the teams know you, you know him. Would you apply? So I said, well, give me 24 hours. I need to consult the government at home. And I phoned him back the next day and said, okay, I'll take the job. So nothing like carefully selected or handpicked or any of those cliches, Clement. I was merely in the right place at the right time. I was the commander. Yeah, I was the commander of that unit when Madiba famously became our first democratic president, and he had a home in Houghton.
Wow. So, Arthur, what are some of, because I imagine there are dangers involved here, right? I mean, you wake up in the morning and you're thinking anything could go bad. How do you guys prepare for any eventuality?
Well, basically, you don't know what you're going to encounter in the day. So you got to basically take everything as it's going to be the worst it can be. So you'll have to just take precaution. And when you respond, when you're doing the armed escorts, be vigilant at all times, know your surroundings at all times. And yeah, take it from there. If something does encounter, you need to perform your duties in the correct way and protect the client and the client's assets.
You know, I often see in the movies, VIP protectors, if anything happens, they surround the client. Like, rather I be the one that's shot than my client.
Yes, that's
which
correct.
I find really fascinating. Like, you just put yourself in the face of danger to protect, of course, that client. Yeah. So, and then in terms of like, you know, artillery, arms, I guess you guys get trained in, you know, in weapons and anything possible you may need to protect the clients, huh?
Yes, that's correct. So you'll do hand-to-hand combat. You do get trained in the firearms. So handguns can be handguns, all the different categories, shotguns, rifles. So, yeah, you need to be well-equipped and well-trained to handle the situations that you're going to encounter.
Rory, were the expectations high on you guys? Because, as you say, you were protecting a man that has just been elected president. He was the most famous man in the world during that time. Everybody was crazy about him. And I wonder if, you know, the consideration before they brought in people to protect him, they're like, we want the most highly skilled personnel. Because also during the time, tensions were still high in South Africa, right? You know, you didn't want to leave anything to chance.
Well, very much so. Sometimes when I think back on it now, Clement, and I consider the responsibility that was thrust upon us, upon that whole unit, I actually go cold. I mean, imagine trying to explain to South Africans, in fact, to the entire globe, that we had lost Madiba, as you correctly said, the most famous person alive. So we managed to set a very high standard, and we didn't have the budget of the United States Secret Service. We didn't necessarily have the educational qualifications of the London Metropolitan Police's special branch or Royalty Protection Unit. But let me tell you, we, through hard work and training and through discussing and finding a way, because Madiba was a magnet for crowds, so we had to deal with a lot of crowd management issues. I hesitate to use the word crowd control. And we became very, very proficient at that. So, for example, Clement, you probably know where Lutuli House is. In the day that we worked, it was called Shell House. So on a Monday, if the president was there with party business and he came out of that building in the center of town and there were children even within sight, we knew 100% he's not going to get into the car. If there's kids there, he's going to those kids. And we would know that, realize it, and we would send our people there to prepare for that eventuality. So they would talk to the teacher and say, listen, you know, we would never give anything away, but we would say that the president may be nearby. Mm. If he decides to walk over here, he's coming to greet the children. Mm. This is what we expect. So what we would say is, don't jump on him. Then we're going to have to pull you off.
Yeah.
Wait your turn. He'll greet every one of you.
Yeah.
He'll probably want to sing with you.
Yeah.
Prepare that. But we would have people there.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of thing that is unique to the principle that we protected. And you know what? When he was, so that's one example. When he was courting Mama Grasa, right?
Yeah.
He would insist on going and buying her chocolates himself. He would want to buy her jewelry. So, flowers. So,
wow.
Do you know what it looks like when Nelson Mandela walks into Sandton City to go to a diet chocolatier?
Yeah.
And we would say to him, Dada, just give us the money and tell us what you want. We'll go, no, I want to choose it myself. Because he wanted to interact with people. And I'm very proud today, almost 30 years later, looking back, and I know my colleagues feel the same, that we, you know, we were responsible for serving a president who wanted to be with his people and who loved children. Yep. I mean, that's a privilege, you know.
Yeah.
So despite the fact that we had a job to do, there was also that side that we perhaps didn't see at the time, because at the time we had our game faces on and our dark glasses and we were working. But now you look back on it and you think, wow, that was a special person and a special time in history, and we were privileged.
No, absolutely. When we come back from the break, we'll discuss more about the work of private security and being a bodyguard. And I'm going to take, I see some of you calling through and even sending your WhatsApps with some inputs on the conversation. We'll get to those after the break as we continue the conversation with Rory and Arthur. It's 22 after 10.
Across the Desk
with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
It's 26 minutes after 10 o'clock. We are exploring the work of private security. I'm hosting bodyguards on Across the Desk this morning. I've got Rory Steyn, who was one of the team leaders for Mandela Security. We've got Arthur Kuto as well, who's a bodyguard at TSP Security. And I also want to hear from you. Maybe you have a relative who is right into private security, who is a bodyguard. Maybe it's your husband. Maybe it's your wife. I mean, do you get scared? How do they prepare? Do they get anxious when they have to go out on specific tasks? I've got Jenny, who's calling us from Randburg. Jenny, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hey. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. You know, people don't actually realize for families how hard it is when your loved one goes out and you never know when they're going to get home in the morning.
Mm.
You know, like my husband's been doing this work for over 30 years and like just a half an hour late, then he thinks the worst. Because bad things always usually happen on the last, call of the shift. It's hard.
Mm.
And like when, before he goes to work, he puts his game face on, you know, so he's got to change his whole mindset and he's got to be serious. Because doing armed reaction, you're alone in a car, working by yourself, and you don't know how far your backup is. You don't know how many guards are on the premises waiting for you. So it's stressful. Like I've heard plenty of stories. He'll come home and he'll talk to me. And it's scary. And then you think to yourself, which shift will be the last one?
Oof.
When are you going to get that phone call to say they're not going to be home? I mean, he's lost tons of friends that way. You know, so it's hard being a family member behind it.
Mm. Jeez, yeah, that can be so scary, Jenny. And I imagine when he gets home in the morning or when he's done with his shift, you are just so grateful that he made it.
Absolutely, because you never know. I mean, the crime in our country is getting a lot worse now. Mm. And you never know when you'll get that phone call.
Yeah,
they don't realize that reaction and the guarding, all the security companies, they're guys that are looking after your premises or your property. They're the first ones to respond before the police come. So never take them for granted. Always appreciate them.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate the kind of responsibility that they have and the work that they do. Arthur, do you like get into like the zone? Because Jenny says her husband used to like, you know, put a serious face every time he leaves and to go for assignments. Like, do you have that as well where you're like, okay, now there's another Arthur I'm putting on. I can't be nice. I've got to be alert and stuff.
So when you come on shift, yeah, you got to know that, like Jenny is saying, that it could be your last. You don't know what's going to happen. Every day is going to be a different challenge. Mm. But when you, and like Jenny also said, is that we are first responders on the scene. So you always got to basically know that you are going to treat that alarm or that response as a positive. You don't know who is waiting for you. You could lose your life. Previously, the owner of Transport Protection Services, known as TPS, he lost his life on duty in 2015. And it's hard. It's hard for the wife. It's hard for the daughters, the family. So it is. It's a risky job. Crime has increased. Crime is always increasing. We go for meetings regularly at the stations in our areas, and the percentage is just climbing.
And with the crime increasing, so many people are going for private security because also people are losing confidence in even the ability of the SAPS to protect us, to protect even, you know, some property.
Across the Desk
with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
It's 24 minutes before 11 o'clock. We've got Arthur Kuto, who is a bodyguard at TPS Security, and Rory Steyn, who was one of the lead commanders, who was leading one of the teams, right, that was doing security for the former President Nelson Mandela. And we're exploring the work of private security. And I've got some interesting questions that are coming from you guys. And Rory, I'll start with one that is specific to you. Tondile is asking that, Clement, please can you ask Rory, as a former Nelson Mandela Protection Commander, I believe the work was very similar to gathering security intelligence for Mandela. My question is, what is it that his team was doing right in terms of gathering the threats around Mandela in comparison to what is being done today? And are there instances where they told Mandela, it's very risky for you to go there, but he insisted on going?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Was it Tondile? Who did you say the young lady was?
Tondi.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Tondi, thanks, Tondi. So no, that was not our responsibility. We were fed intelligence reports that came from the various intelligence services. You know, as and when threats were picked up, they were channeled through to us. So our role was to mitigate against any of those threats. And we did get them from time to time. But to answer your question, Clement, I recall the time in 99, so it must have been the first or second quarter of 99, when Madiba was essentially electioneering for President Thabo Mbeki, and we were in either Vosloorus or Katlehong on the East Rand, and doing a typical thing where the local leaders had arranged a little bit of a walking tour, so we would walk from house to house and, you know, greet a gogo here and a family there. And as we came around a corner, now we're walking, we walked almost slap bang into an Inkatha impi with their red koptuka on their heads. And they saw us and we saw them at the same time. And that whole impi, about 30 men, just squatted down in that beautiful, disciplined fashion that the AmaZulu are known for. And Madiba immediately wanted to go into the middle of those guys and to talk to them, which he did. And he kind of, if you can picture him extending his arms and like moving our protection team that had come and formed a very tight circle around him, kind of like out of the way. And he walked into the middle of them and he addressed them saying, look, we might be enemies at the ballot box, but that doesn't mean we have to be enemies where it comes to we kill one another over ideological or political differences. And then, you know, he said many other things. He was speaking a mixture of English and isiZulu. When we got back to Houghton, my deputy team leader, he's now sadly passed on, a former MK commander called Selby Masikane Sfiso. So when we get back, we have a team debriefing, and I will, as team leader, go into the house with the president to brief him on tomorrow, what time we're starting and all that. At the same time, my deputy will, you know, they'll book back the weapons, get the cars ready for tomorrow and all of that. And then I'll come out and quickly finish the debrief so we can go home and prepare for the next day. And when I came back from briefing the president inside, Selby says to me, Rory, this thing of the president pushing us out of the way and walking into the middle of that impi is unacceptable. he can't disrespect us like that in public, and you need to go and tell him.
Yeah.
I said, okay, wait here. There's no time like the president. I went back in. I knocked on the door. Dada, can I see you? He said, yes, come in. So I tell him what Selby told me. And, you know, he had that way. He would sit with his fingers together and he would listen and let you finish speaking. And then he said, no, Selby is right. He said, you go back there, please, and you apologize on my behalf. I truly respect and am very grateful for the work that all of you do. And it was wrong of me to push you out of the way like that. So please take my apologies back to your team. I said, thank you, Dada. I go out there. So yeah, I come back now to my team carrying the apology of my president. But you know what, Clement? I knew full well that the whole issue of reconciliation and building one South Africa was so important to the president. I think he would have done it again if the opportunity had arisen. Mm. But I was so grateful, and it's a leadership lesson that I have learned and continue to apply to this day, because we all make mistakes. And when you make mistakes, put your hand up and own your mistakes.
Yeah.
And don't be so big or so important or so powerful or so whatever that you aren't able to apologize when you're wrong. And I really, my respect for him, you know, grew even more through that experience. I mean, just think of the incredible maturity and leadership that it took to do that. And I mean, it made our teams, you know, our chests swelled, because, you know, here we have the president saying to us, I appreciate all that you do, and I apologize for doing that. I mean, it's massive. You know? So it's just one way of answering. But no, our job was not intelligence. Our job was to respond and mitigate the threats.
And what about you guys, Arthur? Mm-hmm. Do you gather intelligence as well, or you focus also on response?
We focus on response, but we do gather intelligence.
Mm.
In the areas we operate, we do try and recruit informers, gather, but so we do know what threats we can encounter at any time.
Nkosi is also asking you, Arthur. Clement, please can you ask Arthur if they've encountered any security breach or danger, and how did they handle that? Is there a specific incident that stands out for you where you had to respond and it was life-threatening?
Sure. There's quite a few. There's in reaction, a lot of people think that it's just you going to check alarms. You don't really know what you're going to encounter when you arrive at their premises. From the armed response side of it, lately is a lot of house robberies, burglaries. So when you arrive on a scene, a lot of the criminals now are armed. They will target you. They will wait for you because your vehicle is branded. You easy to identify. A lot of them do necessarily, basically, you can say they assume you've got a firearm because the vehicle is branded. So when you're there, they want to basically protect themselves. They're also scared and nervous. So there's been quite a few shootings we've been in, the company itself. Suspects have been shot. But yes, it is a dangerous scenario.
Yeah. Have you been injured before?
I haven't. Luckily, I haven't. I've been in a few shootings. Luckily,
so you're a top dog, eh? Like, you come out fresh.
I think it's just, with all the
got
prayers.
Got the right training,
and, the prayers and people thinking of you at all the times, eh?
Yeah. Well, what about you, Rory? Have you had an incident where it was just life-threatening during that course of your work?
Yeah, there were one or two incidents, Clement, but thanks for the opportunity. I wanted to ask to come in here just to add a little bit to what Arthur has said, because, of course, working in the private security industry, which is exactly what I've done since the 17th of June, 1999, the day after Madiba handed over the reins of our country to President Mbeki, is I've been working in private security. And the thing that sickens me to the soles of my feet is our colleagues in the private security industry that work, amongst others, but especially and particularly in the cash in transit industry. So this is a guy, imagine coming on duty. Arthur was talking about that earlier. You come on duty, you book out a weapon, you strap on body armor, and you get into an armored vehicle that is carrying anything from 3 million to 40 million in cash. But your colleague in the control room that is sitting with the schedule has sold you out to criminal syndicates for a briefcase full of cash. That is absolutely evil. Mm. And that is what these men and women deal with on a daily basis. It is sick. So I just want to, I want to commend my colleagues and all men and women out there doing that kind of job, as well as, you know, the armed reaction of the armed vehicles that respond to our homes when our alarms trigger or you push a panic button and all that. Just give some thought to those guys when you're on holiday enjoying wherever it is that you're going, that there's somebody who gets up in the morning, kisses his wife on the cheek, puts on his body armor and heads out the door. And like the lady who phoned in, the wife, you could hear the emotion in her voice. She doesn't know whether she's going to see him again. So spare a thought for those colleagues.
Yeah. It's 14 minutes before 11 o'clock. When we come back, more of your questions.
Across the Desk
with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
It's 10 minutes before 11 o'clock. Let's take more of your questions. There's someone who wanted to ask Arthur, how do you guys deal with just witnessing that level of like violence? So when you are reacting, there's like shooting that happens, and sometimes you do see dead bodies. How do you deal with that emotionally?
I think you got to put emotions aside. You can't be emotionally inclined because it will affect you. Personally, I've seen quite a few dead bodies. I've been in a lot of severe violence scenes. But yeah, you can't get emotionally attached to that side of it because it will affect you mentally. So I put it aside. I block it out. And yeah, it helps me that way. To not let it affect me in the future.
Yeah. And Tabi Seng, you're calling us from Benoni. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement. A while back on one of the shows, a security respondent said he had responded to a house where on the checklist, it wasn't mentioned that there's a dog on the premises, but there was a threat on the premises. And on his arrival, he got scared and after the dog chasing him, and he shot the dog. What are the regulations around that? Because he says that he was subsequently dismissed from his job, but the family had neglected to mention that there's a dog on the premises, and he lost his job. But with insurance, if I don't disclose that I've got something, I'm essentially not covered for it. When I claim, they just say, you're not covered for it. What are regulations around that? Should the poor guy have actually lost his job? Or what happened?
Just for clarity, Ntebi saying, so that guy was responding to something.
He was responding. There was a threat on the house.
On the house, yeah.
Yes, and he responded. And he says that, he mentions that on the response sheet, they say on the house that you're going to, on the tablet thing, that this house has a dog or it doesn't have a dog or whatever else pertinent information that is there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, the dog was not mentioned on that on the details.
And he shot at you. Wow, Tabi saying thank you. How does it, like, Arthur, how much information do you need in order to respond appropriately so that an incident like that doesn't happen?
Okay, so on our side or at TPS, with the response side, we ask all the clients to stipulate if they have got a dog, if it is possibly vicious or not, so that when the control room dispatches the reaction officer, they will be aware that there is a dog on premises. If the dog is aggressive, our guys have to use minimum force. So they would normally use like pepper spray if the dog tried to bite them. So you're not physically killing the animal, but you are preventing it from biting you. But animals can also change. Their temperaments can change. They can be not non-vicious sometimes, and sometimes they can be vicious. So it depends on that situation. But pulling a firearm out in a residential area to protect yourself with that dog, it is technically wrong. But the control room should have notified the response officer that there was an animal on site, or they should take it up with the client. The client should be providing those details to the office.
All right. John in Mondio, good morning.
Yes, I got a very good question. There's a perception that to be in security, you've got to be a big guy and quite an intimidating look, and I'm sure that's part of the role. What's the fine line between being on the right side of security, in other words, you're paid to protect, and guys, for example, who say they do private work, and that they do bouncing and debt collecting and that kind of thing.
Because yeah.
Two very
and so they do that as some side hustle. Hello, John?
Yes, yes.
So are you saying they're private security, but also on the side, they are involved in debt collection, etc.?
No, I'm saying there's a fine line in terms of perception that security, you've got to be big guys and you've got to be intimidated. You know, so there's a lot of good guys out there, but there's a perception that there's also a lot of guys that drift into the debt collecting and bouncing and the almost factor that they put out there. Yeah. Anyway, it's just a topic I want to talk about.
Oh, that's a lovely one, John. I can tell you, Arthur didn't intimidate me as he walked into studio this morning. Let's start with you, Rory, and then we'll come back to Arthur. This perception that you've got to be this, you know, huge guy who's intimidating, and when you are not like that, then, you know, people start questioning how great of a private security and effective are you. Yes, Rory? Okay, I think he's probably muted. What about you, Arthur? Is that what people normally expect?
Can you hear me, Clement?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just chuckling and thinking that this is one of the typical misconceptions of the security industry. So, Clement, how I would answer that question is, say, think of a rugby team. So in a rugby team, you need fat guys, you need tall guys, you need fast guys, you need small guys. And the security industry is exactly like that. So the first thing I want to say to the question about bouncers and debt collectors is that there is a law in this country governing how private security operates. It's called the Private Security Industry Regulatory Act. And that law states that you cannot protect either a person or assets unless you are for money, unless you are registered with CERA, which is the regulatory, the government regulatory authority. And that is the whole debate around car guards. So, but we don't have to go down that rabbit hole. That is why paying a car guard to protect your car is not in compliance with that act. So if you have bouncers working at clubs and that sort of thing, that's fine. The club that employs, the company that employs the bouncer, all of them need to comply with that act. So the security officer needs to be registered. The company that employs the security officer needs to be registered. And the client who employs the company needs to be aware of that, because if he employs a company that is not registered or a company that employs a security officer that is not registered, then that client is also guilty of a criminal offense. So is the company, so is the security officer.
Mm.
So there's it's not a one-size-fits-all, and it's definitely not a cookie-cutter industry. So if you come to, well, one, there are many facets to private security, but if you consider that looking after a person, protecting an important or high-ranking individual is near the top of that security industry pyramid, then we always say, because we don't even like the term bodyguard. Bodyguard has got a slightly murky connotation, and I don't want to be called a bodyguard. I prefer being called a protection officer, because we were, you know, we're professional in what we did then, and we still are now. So a professional police or executive protection officer will tell you that The most important part of a protection officer's body is the top 6 inches. What do I mean by that? If you have to draw your weapon, you haven't done your job. So part of being a good protection officer is the awareness that goes with identifying an issue before it becomes a threat and getting your client away. Wow. We're not Rambo, baby brother Bimbo. We are there to keep our clients safe. So get him or her away from the danger. And in a presidential protection unit team, yes, we were armed. Of course we were, but we weren't there to fight any wars. Mm. We had the special task force who would provide security for us, outer perimeter security in a high-risk environment. And that's their job. Our job was to cover the president and evacuate him before it became a problem. If we were surprised, which didn't happen too often, if at all, then our job was still to cover and evacuate him and let those guys fight the battle. Yeah. So that's a long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
No. But the great answer there. Arthur, what's been your experience? You come across that kind of perception as well?
Yes, it is. There is that perception. But like Rory stated, yes, you need all different sizes. A lot of guys want a big guy, but he's not maybe as effective as a smaller guy. So yes, it does basically mean that you need all different calibers, sizes, if they're intimidating, if they're not, because there's different scenarios and different scenes that you go to, different environments that you'll be situated in.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for joining me, Protection Officers Rory Steyn and Arthur Kutu. I appreciate your time.